Consumer Focus with Martin Newman.
Hello and welcome to Consumer Focus, bringing you expert advice and opinion on customer service and the Great British High Street. My name is Martin Newman and I've worked in commerce for more than 35 years and I am dedicated to championing the consumer and helping businesses to develop the best strategies for their customers. Funnily enough, and just in case you didn't know, I'm running a little event at Olympia on the 25th and 26th of September. And if you're interested in going, go to www.customerfirst.live. And if you use the code MN for my initials and then CFL for Customer First Live, you get a cheeky wee 10% discount. Today, I have the privilege of being joined by Angus Thurwell, CEO and co-founder of Hotel Chocolat, to discuss how he is making sure that he puts his customers first. And having reviewed a branch of Hotel Chocolat myself for my web series Fix the High Street, I'm keen to hear more about how he's engaging customers. Angus, thank you so much for joining me.
Martin, thanks for inviting me.
Tell me, what inspired you to begin a career in the chocolate industry? That's what we all want to know.
Well, it's completely by accident. You know, we started off in a very obscure section of the entire confectionery world, which is in corporate branded peppermints.
Right.
And then gradually edged our way closer and closer to the most exciting subject matter in the food lexicon, which is, of course, chocolate.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, I didn't start off my career thinking I must be a chocolatier and all that. But it's a very seductive medium to get involved in. You know, it covers agriculture, online. You know, how we met. You know, years ago, manufacturing, and then you get into things like the socioeconomic and medical benefits of chocolate as well. Mm-hmm. So it's something that actually you'll never get bored with, and I haven't. You know, we run two bars, we've built a hotel, we're getting into visitor attractions.
You've got a vertically integrated business, really, haven't you, pretty much?
Very much, yeah, and we can go a long, long way to effectively reinvent chocolate, which is what we're doing. Mm. It's no longer just something that you see in a neat, shelf-stacked presentation in a supermarket, and you choose amongst, you know, numerous brands. There's a different way of doing it, which is unlocking the actual reason that people are interested in chocolate in the first place, the escapism, what it can do for you. Yeah. So we're having so much fun turning the market upside down in our own way. And fortunately, we've got a lovely customer base who like what we're doing.
Well, from what I can tell, you've certainly done a good job of turning the market on its head, that's for sure. And tell me, just out of curiosity, you talked there about the fact that you started as essentially doing peppermint creams, but more, you know, as a sort of corporate gifting or targeting the corporate gifting sector. Was there a specific point in time where you decided actually, you know, the business side of it is great, but let's go after consumers? What was the driver for that?
We still have a very strong B2B element embedded within Hotel Chocolat because, you know, we love that sort of profile of business.
Yeah.
But the trigger really was a lot of our friends and relatives used to say to us, you must be so busy, it's sort of Christmas or Easter. And we weren't. You know, our business was beautifully even throughout the year. We were focusing more on different objectives. Mm-hmm. And that was the real catalyst to take a closer look at it. And our first consumer-facing proposition was fast-delivered chocolate gifts. Mm-hmm. And that involved us getting a very early website put up in the mid-late 1990s. And so we learned very, very quickly about the value of a database, the value of digital, and what our customers could tell us about what they really wanted from us, and that could help shape our proposition and keep us sort of relevant.
Yeah, and you were, from what I recall, you started very much as a sort of catalogue retailer, didn't you? You were very early into direct mail and seeing the benefits of that. And so I suppose the kind of move from there into e-commerce
was
quite a natural extension.
Yes, and we see them as being completely interwoven, in fact, because even now, we love a bit of printed paper marketing, as long as it's recycled and recyclable,
yes,
of course.
But
there's nothing like that to drive online behaviour. Mm-hmm. And similarly, digital work sometimes leads to people picking one of our publications up and reading it. So the whole thing is completely interwoven, and you know, we love both bits, but the transaction slickness and the depth of content that you can carry perpetually on online is just unrivaled, and we're very early advocates of that.
You've probably touched on a couple of points already, Angus, but what makes Hotel Chocolat different to other luxury chocolate retailers?
Well, the one we touched on is being born digital, which is, you know, highly unusual in a classic chocolate model, because a lot of it hinges on immediate gratification, and you know, no online players have yet been able to offer instantaneous delivery. That's yet to be you know, summoned
feels
up.
Feels like it's on the way.
It's definitely going to be on the way, exactly. Yeah. But in the meantime, it's about gift deliveries and big household purchases for the season, like Easter eggs. So being born digital is radically different, and we still have a quarter of our sales online. The other thing is being involved in the agricultural side, growing cacao, running our own farm, our own estate. We get involved in every element of the agronomy. We're literally grafting different gene types of cacao to be able to preserve our rare type that we grow on our own operation.
Just for the benefit of listeners, whereabouts is that?
That's in the hotbed of some of the world's best cacao in the Caribbean.
Right.
And, you know, all through those little islands, you get amazing flavoured cacao. So we're in St. Lucia, down in the southwest. And, it's disgrace. It completely turned the outlook of our business on its head, the fact that we were suddenly looking at things from a cacao grower's view outwards. It made us get into things like cocoa gin, where we distill the shells into the cocoa, doing a lot more on the drink side, you know, reinventing the original way that humans got connected with chocolate, which is through drinks. So way before the first chocolate bar was ever made, which was incidentally by Fry in Bristol in the 1800s, you already had, getting on for 250 years, of Europeans drinking chocolate. And there were literally 700 drinking chocolate establishments in London, which is amazing. So, you know, going right back to that, and just generally looking at the relationship between consumers and the potential of chocolate in a very, very different way. We don't sell our chocolate through supermarkets, which, again, is, you know, is very rare. You know, most of the world's chocolate gets purchased through supermarkets, and probably will for a very long time. Consequently, we've had to, in order to survive and develop new ways to connect with the consumer, which has led to us investing in our own channels. And, you know, physical meets digital meets subscription is our, you know, holy triangle there, which we love. So no, it's I think we're a completely different breed. We're more like a fashion brand, really, than a complete out and out chocolate brand.
It's very experiential, that's for sure.
We try to be, yeah.
And obviously, having your own channels of distribution has enabled you to control that experience to a large extent. Which obviously, if you were selling, you know, if you were selling your brand wholesale to other retailers, you lose control, don't you, of that consumer touch point?
Completely. And, you know, you end up ultimately being commoditized and supported only by your own above the line TV advertising. So having our own channels means we're spending the TV advertising money instead on effectively, you know, rent and shop fit outs. And that enables us to invite our customers, our guests into our space, our home, and to show them a good time. So at a very superficial level, that means that we're perpetually offering anybody that comes through the Hotel Chocolat doorway a chocolate, and not just a tiny bit, a whole chocolate. And that's an open offer. Anybody that wants to pitch up anytime, you'll always get a chocolate.
You go, you heard it here first.
It's better than your 10% off deal, I must say.
Oh, I don't know. It depends on. Oh, you've got to put everything into context.
Absolutely. But it's not just a chocolate. It's a chocolate with trained content. So our team who offer it will always want to tell a story about it. And that's because they've been trained on our internal school of chocolate. They have the confidence to want to engage. And it's not us poking them out there on the end of a stick. They're literally, they've got the knowledge, they're enthusiastic, you know, people who love talking to other people. And the what we call it our conversation chocolate, actually, because it's intended to stimulate a conversation, does its business.
So that's obviously, I mean, your staff, your team, your colleagues are obviously a very core part of bringing the experience to life and driving customer centricity. What else does being customer centric mean both to you and to Hotel Chocolat as a brand?
We sort of take customer centricity as a almost like a hygiene factor. You know, if you haven't got that and you're not customer centric, you know, you probably won't be around long enough to come and do a podcast with you. Mm. You know, it's like absolute essential in no matter what business you're in. If you're not thinking about your customers, big problem. Mm. But many people go off the boil and they become internalized and focusing on the wrong thing. So it's not really something to super perform over. It's something to actually have a future at all. Mm. And then knowing that you've got that, you're then focusing on, well, how do we make sure that the customer's enjoyment of the brand is optimized? Mm-hmm. And for us, that begins with our team. If we make our team happy, then we stand a good chance of making our customers happy. Mm-hmm. That's one big part. And then the other big part, and this is all, you know, pretty simple stuff, is doing something relevant, which always comes back to product. And in our case, our product is pretty much exclusive to our channels. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a compelling reason why you should come to Hotel Chocolat. It's not a pair of trainers that you could buy anywhere, you know, more effectively online. This is unique stuff.
Sure.
Some of it is not deliverable. You know, for example, a freshly whipped ice cream of the gods, or, you know, a chocolate lock-in experience. Mm-hmm. All those things really add up to a simple mantra of happy people making customers happy with product that's relevant and interesting and stays that way.
I have to say, Angus, I do like a drink or two, but the idea of, you know, being locked in a pub and being able to continue drinking or having a chocolate lock-in experience, I know which one I'm going for, and it's definitely the latter. I really love this phrase of yours, cacao cuisine. What are your main aims when you launch a new product or initiative, and what steps do you take to ensure that it's a hit with your customers?
Yeah, it's something we spend a lot of time talking about because we aim to be the sector specialist. We definitely don't expect every single product to be a complete across-the-board bestseller. We know that the broad customer base that we enjoy and we love have very varied tastes and preferences. So some of our customers love a fruity accented white chocolate. Mm. Other customers are complete, you know, 100% no added sugar. I'm following a paleo diet. I'm, you know, a triathlete in my spare time. And that's another product that we love doing and everything in between. Mm. So we're always, I suppose, trying to make sure that we keep the different tribes of our customer base engaged and excited. Mm-hmm. And the excitement comes from innovation. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty lucky that we're never short of ideas. On the contrary, we have normally a big problem doing the triage on the ideas, you know, which we try to do very regularly because, you know, you make a decision one month and then literally the next month you want to shuffle the pack in a different way and say, no, actually this one's now, you know, number one. Mm-hmm. And it's taken us a long time to stop being apologists for that and actually just accepting that it comes with the territory of being, you know, a creatively and ideas-driven business. Yep. So it's actually a good thing. It's very easy to have no problem with your ideas pipeline when you've only got one or two every five years.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's really how we focus on realizing the potential of the cacao bean. And it spans everything from a beauty range through to, you know, alcohols, which we want to do a lot more on, and every permutation of chocolate that you could think of, really.
I certainly want to hear more about that. So the marriage of my two favourite products, alcohol and chocolate, couldn't get any better than that, I have to say. You put taste at the forefront of what you do. That's fairly obvious. How do you work out what good chocolate is?
Well, first of all, and this is something that anybody can use in their everyday life, flip over whatever you've got and look at the ingredients. And if the number one ingredient is sugar, in our book, it should not be called chocolate at all. And in fact, this is the case for the vast majority of chocolate that's on sale. It's actually part of the candy or confectionery family. Mm-hmm. And it just happens to be, you know, the same colour as chocolate. But real chocolate should always begin with number one ingredient, cocoa or cacao. Mm-hmm. And even with white chocolate, in which case it's cacao butter. With milk chocolate, it's cacao first. And you can still have creaminess and mellowness and a little bit of sweetness, enough sweetness. Sweetness also comes from the lactose in milk, incidentally. Mm-hmm. So that's our very simple mantra, more cocoa, less sugar. And we, you know, in most of our locations, we have that blazing out in neon. And particularly when we opened up in Japan and the US, our research showed that that really resonated with those cultures. And we know that it's getting a lot of traction in the UK. Mm-hmm. So that's where we start. And that then gives us a sporting chance of making a good chocolate. Mm-hmm. Then the next, we have a regular Wednesday session where we taste the chocolates in a group of about eight of us. We then, without talking, hold up a red or green card. Mm-hmm. And after we've voted without any sort of lobbying, we then start arguing. And then the recipes that come through that then are put into our chocolate tasting club, where our club members then vote on the chocolates and score them. Mm-hmm. And the highest rated recipes there then eventually make their way into our regular wall of chocolate in our ongoing range. So there's literally a three-step triage that has to happen, and absolutely means that we only get the best ones through.
How many customers are involved in that last part there in rating and voting for the best chocolates or the ones to get through?
It goes to a regular base every month of about 30,000.
Oh, wow.
So it's definitely numerically
significant. Yeah, absolutely. Great to get that feedback.
And the thing is, Martin, we've been doing the tasting club as a model for 20 years. Yeah. So imagine how much data we've got from 12 months a year, 20 years, that number of people scoring. Yeah. And that's what has enabled us to get our product architecture right. We've just literally got more data than even the big guys, the big, you know, confectionery conglomerates don't get the sort of data we've got.
Yeah, but what you've done, obviously, as you've said, is you've turned that into insight.
Yeah,
actionable insight.
We do something with it.
Enables you to make great decisions. For those of you that can't see what's going on right now, which you obviously can't, is that a pair of coffee bean cufflinks you're wearing right now?
Nearly. They're cocoa bean.
Cocoa bean.
Yeah. Cufflinks. So it was really lovely. I got given them by our team in St. Lucia to celebrate 10 years of working together.
Oh, very nice.
So they they contributed a little bit each, and then got these cufflinks made, and gave a set to me and to my business partner, Peter, as well. So it was a really, really lovely thing to do.
Very rewarding.
Yeah.
And I suspect maybe the start of a range of Hotel Chocolat jewellery coming to a store near you sometime.
Well, yes.
Who knows?
I wouldn't say no, exactly.
Part of the range extension. Just on that subject, you've launched Hotel Chocolat Cafes, a very brave move, some might argue even a bit risky, but it really seems to have paid off. What made you decide to do that?
When we thought about what our physical spaces offer, and starting on as a digital player, we clearly had to answer that in order to justify to ourselves opening the first one. Well, what's it going to do more than our online proposition? And it was all about the escapism and leisure. It's a little, you just walk through our doorway and we want to show you something that makes you feel great and happy. And there's something about chocolate drinks, hot chocolate in the winter typically, and choc shakes in the summer. We've got an amazing ice cream of the gods that's infused with cocoa, which is known as the food of the gods in a botanical description. Mm-hmm. So we realised we had some great products, and what we really focused on is not being dragged into doing everything like toasted sandwiches and salads and stuff like that. We're very clear about what our drinks and ices proposition does, and what it's intended to offer people is a little touch of luxury, a lift during your day, and we're seeing that people are kind of choreographing their their day, they're saying, oh yeah, I'm going to do this, this, and pop in there and then swing by Hotel Chocolat, get a, you know, 85% hot chocolat, and then we're going to do a bit of shopping and, you know, carry on. And I think increasingly that's what people are doing. It's taken us probably 7 years to hone that offer and get it where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. But now we're really, really pleased with it, and we're getting great results. So we don't really view them as being cafes, because that can lead to over-promising. Mm-hmm. They're just Hotel Chocolats, and yeah, they offer the full range of what we do. You know, we've got beauty lines in there. We're mm-hmm. selling small electrical goods with our hot chocolate making machine.
Right.
You know, and of course, the least we can do is whip up the odd hot chocolate here and
sure.
there.
Sure, give people the opportunity to actually consume it.
Yeah.
Your brand is fairly synonymous with sustainability, which is very core to my belief system and something I care deeply about. Do you think that customers care more about sustainable and responsible farming and production than former generations?
Yeah, I think there's better information flows around, and it's taken a while, I mean literally too long in my book, and we're talking decades here, for the consumer to realise that the agricultural end of the chocolate supply chain is screwed. You know, it's been left to rack and ruin, and literally, you know, the big confectionery brands have been content to leave farmers literally on a knife edge of subsistence living. Mm. You know, it all just about hangs together every year, and then they roll on to another year and another year. And the only way of breaking out of that is consumer power. And, you know, it's been great to play our small role in activating that. And with our own operation in St. Lucia, we've been able to get stuck in, you know, put our boots on the ground, invest our money in trying to showcase a better way of doing it. Mm. Where we've literally nearly tripled the price for a sack of cocoa that we pay to the other farmers we work with mm-hmm. on the island of St. Lucia mm-hmm. than before we arrived. So that's like a 300% increase. Mm-hmm. We're really proud to have done that. And only now are people going back into cocoa agriculture in St. Lucia. And, you know, that's kind of the change that was necessary. Mm-hmm. But in the chocolate world, generally, the margins are big enough that there could be quite substantial increases in the amount paid for cacao, even, and it has improved, but it's got a way to go still.
Well done for being the vanguards and leading the way.
Well, ourselves and other people as well. So sure. we've just been helped catalyse it in our sure. own small way.
Yeah, I think you're doing a pretty good job of that. Tell me, what is the best piece of advice that you would have for anyone starting out in the chocolate industry? What do you wish someone had told you when you started all those years ago?
my honest answer is, don't come into the chocolate industry, because we're here, and you know we're aiming to get better and better every year.
Sure.
But
you're going to make it harder for others to come in.
Well, that's our intention, and
barriers to entry.
And you know what? In other areas, you know, in trying to start a chocolate brand that sells through supermarkets,
yep.
very hard. Mm. You know, with the power of grocers and the way they play with small brands uh-huh. like a cat plays with a mouse, not very nice. Yeah. So I would give some advice, but in a broader sense, which is, if you're entrepreneurially minded and you want to do something for yourself, you've got to start with what you're passionate about and what you're genuinely interested in. And if you're not, then don't try and think your way into a business model, because, you know, as a leader, it'll always come across as unconvincing.
Yeah.
And the role of leaders more and more is about being the real deal, about being authentic, and people mm-hmm. can smell it a mile off.
Yeah, definitely.
So start with something you love and then just get going in a small way, and be ready to adapt your way to success. Just stay alive, stay agile, and figure it out.
Tell me something on a very personal level, if you don't mind. You know, you could basically be spending most of your hours on a hammock in St. Lucia, you know, eating chocolates all day. You know, you're a successful guy. You've got a brilliant business. What drives you to continue to want to, you know, create a better business, create a more sustainable business, whatever it is? What are those core drivers, Angus?
Well, I think I must by accident have followed you know, my own mantra on that, which is find something you love doing, and then you know you don't feel like you're working.
You just love it every day.
So I you know I'm not really interested in hammocks. Otherwise, I've gone in the hammock business. but I'm very lucky that we get to do everything from, you know, running bars. You know, we've got a bar in Borough Market, another one in the Caribbean, hotel. You know, I get involved in manufacturing, which is really, really interesting. There's creativity everywhere. You know, we're doing industrial design to you know, create electrical hot chocolate makers. Obviously, the online side, I'm really fascinated by agriculture. You know, I'm lucky that I get to talk politics sometimes with, you know, people or business or things like that. So I'm one of the luckiest people to have a very broad-based job that is just, you know, it's difficult not to be spring out of bed in the morning, basically.
So, and throwing in the odd triathlon here there as well.
if only. No, I'm much shorter than that. But no, I like to eat prodigious amounts of cacao every day, and that keeps me feeling really energetic, and a little bit of sport as well helps.
Sounds like it works for all your colleagues as well. I didn't actually mention, funnily enough, that my wife Laura, who will be enjoying listening to this, used to work as a quality and technical manager for Cadbury's, but prior to that, Duncan's of Scotland.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so she started her career in chocolate and worked in it for many, many years.
Yeah, they're good businesses, yeah.
Angus, you and I could talk all day. Sadly, we don't have time for that. And I'm very grateful for you taking time out of your extremely busy schedule to come and talk to us about the world of hotel chocolat. So thank you so much. Thank you for listening to Consumer Focus with me, Martin Newman, and my guest, Angus Thurwell. I absolutely loved hearing about how you treat customer centricity within your business. And if you've enjoyed listening to this podcast and would like to hear more about some great businesses and what they're doing around customer-centric transformation, please do get yourself along to customerfirst.live, which is at Olympia on the 25th and 26th of September. And if you'd like a wee discount off a ticket, please use the code MN for Martin Newman, my initials, and CFL for Customer First Live. Angus, thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure, Martin, and good luck with the series.
Thank you, thank you. Hope you all enjoyed listening and look forward to talking next time about the latest in consumer concerns. Thank you.